on to the Torah portion.
Talked a little bit the last week about Shemini, chapters 9 through 11 of Leviticus. And a couple of main things from there. One, of course, the death of Nadab and Abihu. And the other ones, the dietary instructions. And I guess that's the thing I want to focus on to start with, because I think there is a common thread that runs through this. Spent a little bit of time discussing the idea of foreign fire and some of the things that that we can draw from the story of Nadab and Abihu. Certainly there's a lot of, I guess you'd say, Kentucky windage. I like that term over the years. What was really going on there? Maybe they were dissing Moshe. Maybe they were drunk. A whole lot of things that people will say are possibilities. I did hear a nice discussion by David Foreman that there are some similarities, some parallels between what Nadab and Abihu did and the incident that got Adam and Chava, Eve, kicked out of the Garden of Eden. It was a failed attempt to be like God. They got a little carried away with themselves, and I think that is that's an interesting parallel. In an attempt to draw close to him, they ended up getting so enthused that they did so in a way that he did not command. And you can make the same claim, obviously, for Adam and Eve, that they tried to be more like God. It was one of those first two lies. To whom much is given, much is expected. There's another one of those teachings that is repeated throughout the Torah and also shows up in a place that some folks don't want to hear about, and that happens to be the apostolic writings, too. There's some plenty of good midrash. As you know, I like certain things that people like Rashi have said. When midrash is consistent with the Torah, we can listen to it and learn from it. And when it's not, well, we can maybe even learn from that and reject certain aspects, but it doesn't mean we throw it all out. It has been said, and I tend to think that what the message of Nadab and Abihu is, and it's a little bit like the message of Moshe and so many others, that when those who ought to know better do something that is wrong, and that applies to teachers as too, it's a good understanding, they're held to a higher standard, as it should be. Which leads me again to a thing that I think people are pretty well familiar with, so I'm not going to belabor it, but I will mention it just by way of getting into the portion for this week, Tasria. Because chapter 11 of Leviticus ends with the first major discussion in the Torah about clean and unclean things. And I'm going to use that term specifically. In other words, not clean and unclean food, because there are things that are food and there are other things that aren't food. We're just plain not supposed to eat them. They are unclean, but because they're unclean, they're really not food. Most people will understand and have, I'm sure, been through the reading here. When it comes to animals, it's relatively easy. They're supposed to have a parted hoof or a cloven hoof, and they're supposed to chew the cud. And most biologists, and indeed most rabbis will point out to you, there's really only one family of animals on the planet that don't chew the cud, but have a cloven hoof, and that's the swine, or the pork, or the boar, that whole big family of piggy kind of animals. They're essentially a little bit unique in that, and we can draw a lot of conclusions, and again, we've talked about that of late, too. Like the fact that the pig is arguably one of the most unclean of animals. Almost all of the major diseases, pandemics that have afflicted mankind, up until the point where now mankind is capable of genetically modifying things and taking pig genes and adding bird flu to them. But prior to that, and I guess you could still make the case that they still come through pigs, there's a whole lot of uncleanness that comes through that one family of animals. And the rabbis tend to say, I'm not going to argue with it, again, don't build doctrine upon it, but it's interesting at least, that it's because the pig is deceptive. He looks like he ought to be clean, but he's not. And that gets us into a whole lot of trouble. Well, this idea of clean has come up a lot already with food, and it continues through the next, literally, couple of portions. And that was what was kind of fascinating to me as I began looking at Tasria and then Metzorah this week. Let's go to chapter 12. It says, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, saying, speak unto the children of Israel. And first, he's going to talk about what happens when a woman has a child, a baby. And again, here's one of those places. It's not politically correct. And we oftentimes in, you know, modern American society want to say, well, we know better than God. They're equal. Well, that's not what he says. We don't know why, necessarily. There's some speculation what it might be, but nevertheless, the fact is, it says here, if a woman has a man, a child, a baby boy, she is to be unclean for 7 days, kind of like the time of the impurity of her her monthly cycle. She's to be unclean. But on the eighth day, that's the day that the circumcision of the foreskin of the young baby happens, Brit Milah. By the way, it's eighth day, period, even if it turns out it's a Shabbat, because that's what it says. And it also says, then she shall continue in that blood of purification for 33 days. And there are some limits there. It's not to touch any set-apart thing, come into the sanctuary until those days are fulfilled. And then there's a slight difference. Matter of fact, it's a 2x difference, twice. If she bears a female child, then she's to be unclean 2 weeks, as in her impurity, and then continues in that blood of purification for 66 days, 66 days. At the end of that time, she brings an offering, depending upon how wealthy she is, to the door of the tent of meeting under the priest to make atonement for her. And then she is to be cleansed from the fountain of her blood. This is the Torah for her that bears, whether a male or a female. And then it says, you know, after she does whatever and a little bit less, it's an easier to make hurdle offering. It's two turtle doves or two young pigeons if she's not wealthy enough to be able to provide a lamb. Priest makes atonement, and she shall be clean, tahora. Chapter 13 then continues, a little bit more about clean and unclean. Yahuwah tells Moshe and Aaron and says to them following, when you have a man, and now we get to a whole bunch of stuff that literally sounds almost like a medical textbook, when there is in the skin of his flesh a rising or a scab or a bright spot, and it becomes like... This is interesting. Like the plague of leprosy, and it really is zara'at. This is the first time that word is used in Scripture. We tend to translate it as leprosy, and I think, it's important to point out that really, so far as we're aware, we don't have exactly this same malady today. The thing that gets called leprosy and that most people think is done away with, and there's a few leper colonies in a few places like on the island of Molokai in Hawaii. But that is probably, according to most of the experts, a different malady or disease than the one that is being described here as zara'at. I guess there's something to be said for that understanding, too. The priest is to look upon that plague in the skin of the flesh, and if the hair is turned white, it's deeper than the skin of the flesh, yep, then it's leprosy. And the priest looks upon this person, and it says here in the English, pronounces him unclean. That's an interesting way to look at it. It really doesn't quite say that. It just says that he is. Tameh. He is simply unclean. There's a lot more detail, like I said. On the seventh day, he looks again, and then there is a large series of understandings. What happens if it does this? If it hasn't spread, then he shuts him up for 7 days more, looks again on him 7 days later, and if the plague is now dim and it hasn't spread, well, now he can be pronounced clean. It's a scab. Washes his clothes, and he's clean. But if the scab has spread in the skin after he's shown himself to the priest for cleansing, then he shows again. And if he looks, and now it has spread. So the key here is he looks, waits 7 days, looks again, and then we look for certain things. If the priest sees that the thing has spread, then he is still unclean. Tameh. When the spread of the leprosy is in a man, he's to be brought to the priest. More detail. What if there's a white rising in the skin? The hair's turned white. If there's old leprosy... If there's new leprosy, if there's different kinds of raw flesh, things that the priest sees. How about if there's a boil and it's healed? In the place of the boil, there's a white rising or a bright spot or reddish white. Then he looks at that too. And it's either ultimately going to be pronounced clean or unclean. Verse after verse, if the thing has spread, then the priest is to tell him he is unclean. It's a plague. But if it stays in place, it's not spread, then eventually he gets to be pronounced clean. continuing, more verses. What about if there's some hair involved? Well, then he is to be shaven in places other than in the area of the skull. Then he's shut up for 7 days more. Priest again looks. If it hasn't spread beyond that, he is again going to wash his clothes and be clean. But if he does see a spread, then he is unclean. Verse 43 and 44 is kind of where I want to pause for a second. If he's, let's start just a little bit before. How about if a man is bald? If the hair's fallen off from the front part of his head, he's forebald, yet he can be clean. If there's a bald head or a bald forehead or reddish white plague, and if it's leprosy breaking out in his bald head or upon his bald forehead, then the priest looks at it. There's some descriptions of the color. If it's reddish white or it's the appearance of this zara'at in the skin of the flesh, well then, says verse 44, he is ish zaruah, a leprous ish man. He is unclean. And then we see this. This is one of these places where the Hebrew language is particularly descriptive. It's tameh. He is essentially repeated, right? Unclean, unclean. Plague is in his head. And at this point, the man who has been so pronounced is to rend his clothes. The hair of his head goes loose. He covers his upper lip and he cries. Everybody's seen this in the movies probably, right? Tameh, tameh. Unclean, unclean. All the days where the plague is enemy is to be unclean. He is unclean. You get the idea. We're talking about something that is unclean, unclean, unclean. We've been talking about unclean food. We've been talking about things that happen after delivery, where a woman, during this period of the post-birth blood flow, is unclean. Now the man who has this plague, zara'at, is unclean, unclean. He dwells alone, and he goes outside the camp. The next part of the chapter literally goes on to point out, and we're going to see this in next week as well, that there's other places that we can have this kind of an infection. It can actually be in a garment, woolen or linen garment, in the warp or the woof. And there's some descriptions about that one too. What if we see this? Similar kinds of things. The priest looks at it, shuts the thing up, checks it again 7 days later, sees whether or not it has been spread. And if it's malignant or fretting or pricking, first used of those kind of words, then it too is unclean. Ultimately, if the garment is unclean and cannot be saved, then it gets burned. It's verse 59 that summarizes some of this, and we'll come back and we'll pick up a couple of extra pieces on this before we move on this evening. Chapter 13 ends with this. This is the Torah of the plague of zara'at. We've talked about it first in people, and then now this time in a garment of wool or of linen, or in the skin of anything. And the priest is to either declare that it is clean or pronounce it unclean. That is, I think, an interesting observation. That's where I want to pause. This concept of clean and unclean has appeared now through a chapter after chapter in a bunch of different guises, in a bunch of different ways. Again, first in the dietary instructions, at least first in this section of the Torah, and then in these other places. And when we get to this idea of a zara'at, it seems a little bit more severe even. Now there's a putting outside of the camp that's associated with it, and the person who has been declared, pronounced unclean is to also pronounce that to others so that we don't get a spreading of this thing. I think probably most of you that have been through the Torah portion a few times have heard the connections. Motzei Shem Ra, Lashon Hara, the claim at least that that somehow or other it would seem that this zara'at thing, whatever it is, if we want to call it leprosy, well, we don't have much better word in English, so I still like just to call it zara'at. But somehow or other, it might be associated with the evil tongue. So it strikes me as not particularly unusual then that there's this emphasis on declaring things, pronouncing something to be unclean, and that the person, too, who is pronounced to be unclean is to make that pronouncement himself. Unclean, unclean. Next week, we'll talk about Metzorah, and it says in the beginning of chapter 14, this will be the Torah of HaMetzorah, that one who has this this malady. And then there's a process that's described. We'll go through that in a little bit of detail. What is to happen, and at the end of this period of time, of the time of the cleansing and the rejoining, what is to go on. And then there's a discussion about the fact that even houses can be infested with this. I wonder if there's a metaphor there somehow. Let's really, unless there's some questions that specifically have to do with this one, I'll probably pause at this point. Any local questions? Here's where I kind of want to just step back for a second and say, all right, let's kind of see where we're at. What is it that has to do with this discussion of Nadab and Abihu? And essentially, if you read most of the Midrash, the general consensus seems to be that these were set-apart people. These were tzaddikim. These were good guys. These were not drunkards who fell into a bad place and got whacked because they were nasty blankety-blanks. These were well-thought-of people. Yeah, no shortage of possibilities for what may have gone wrong, including the fact that they should have been married. I mean, you can look at the Midrash and find all kinds of reasons why they may have fallen short. And I do find personally, at least the one that resonates with me the best, is that in their enthusiasm to be like God, trying to draw close to Him, they just kind of didn't do it the right way. And they did it in a way that He did not command. And to whom much is given, much was expected. So they fell short. And they were like a good student is expelled, right? You don't tend to expel the bad student from a university, get rid of them other ways. But it's the good student that gets made an example of. And in this case, the example has been made an example for us throughout history. A warning here. And to some extent, even one of the greatest men who ever walked the planet spoke face to face with Yah, or at least spoke directly to Him. Moshe, similarly, was held to a high standard. He didn't enter the land because of, relatively minor mistakes, or maybe even a mistake singular, we would say. And then we follow that up with all of this stuff about what it is to be clean and unclean, things that we're not supposed to eat, things that we're not supposed to do, things that will get us put outside the camp if we do them. What interests me about this, again, is where we are today. You know, we're outside the land. We can't very well put somebody outside the camp if we don't have a camp, and we don't expect that, at least in the short term, we're going to be able to enter the land. So the question always comes up, well, what relevance does this stuff have to us? To some extent, I think it's obvious. Even though you won't hear this from the Christian community, and you won't hear it from the secular community, there are things that we're not supposed to eat. They're just simply not food. There are things that are unclean to us and that will cause problems. And yeah, if this idea of Zara'at is somehow associated with Lashon Hara, with the evil tongue, with things that we should not be saying, and that's what it does, well, then two questions arise. One, shouldn't we just avoid that as best we can, avoid gossip and the evil tongue? That seems logical, but hey, maybe we don't have to worry about it, because didn't we just finish saying we don't see this disease around anymore? Maybe it doesn't matter. I tend to differ on that score. I think it does matter. And whether or not the consequences of this bad action are visited on us immediately, in other words, if we're not being held to the same high standards that Nadab and Abihu were at the current time, you could call it grace if you want to. Be thankful that we're not held to those standards, because we're perhaps still walking in a little bit of the ignorance that we've inherited from our fathers. We're going to talk more again about this idea of clean and unclean, about things that are good for us to do, good for us to eat, and things that we need to separate ourselves from. I want to just, since I don't see any questions, conclude this part of the service this evening with a couple of lines from the end of chapter 14, where it tells us one more time, hey, uses the word Torah in this sentence, and it gets translated wrong in most of the English versions. I don't like the law. What it says really is this is the instruction concerning all manner of ha-zara'at, this thing that is called leprosy in English, and for a skull, and for the same kind of thing if it's in a garment or in a house, for a rising, for a scab, for a bright spot. What's the point? It says in verse 57, it's about to teach us when something is unclean and when it is clean. This is the Torah of ha-zara'at. Haven't seen the plague. I guess I've never seen it in my lifetime, but I've certainly seen the things that we ought to be able to recognize are clean and unclean. So let's focus on that.